Columbus Avenue. So, and again, I think we have them cold, Sue, in that they purposely ignored, and they did a very good job of it, of avoiding any photography of those Type M poles. And I'm convinced that's because they know what they are, and they didn't want to open that can of worms. They didn't want to voluntarily disclose that to the State Historic Preservation Office. And as I wrote in my narrative, their narrative also minimizes the streetscape to not make any narrative mention of them. There's no photography, and there's no narrative mention of them. So I think we can do a good job of showing the State Historic Preservation Office that they were intentionally not wanting to bring up the topic of the top Type M poles, let alone the Type B pedestrian poles, which you discovered in plural. I found one, you found the second one, and I didn't realize it were two. So I think that's also a big message. But that document that was referred to by Ellen from the Landmark Preservation Commission is the same document that I was referring to, that I sent you a copy of. And that was that way back.
I noticed.
Yeah, and I had been aware of that. I'm kicking myself because I had been aware of that document some months ago. But I didn't realize that it actually had buried in that one paragraph a mention of Columbus Avenue, and it was specifically mentioning reproduction poles. And the context there is important because that document from the Landmark Preservation Commission is talking about individual historic poles that, God love them, somebody went around, primarily Manhattan, because they were also over in, like, I guess, Park Slope and Brooklyn and some of the other older, leafier neighborhoods in Brooklyn, at least, maybe Queens, but I think certainly Brooklyn. And Grand Concourse up in the Bronx, somebody actually went up there and inventoried these wonderful old historic poles. They're all over the financial district and down by City Hall complex and all that sort of stuff. And that paper was celebrating these 150-year-old or older poles that are still extant in New York City. But a section of that paper was talking about the reproductions and why the reproductions were important and why they were bringing back this historically accurate lighting. And so I'm going to work sections of that Landmark Preservation Commission document that was putting historic status on these poles into my document. And I'm going to mention the fact, hey, we know that this was a conscious decision to put these poles up and down Columbus. And clearly they were doing it. And the terminology there is boulevard lighting. It's in the paper if you read it. Boulevard lighting.
Oh, boulevard lighting.
Boulevard lighting. So if you take it on the concept of, I think of it more in terms of Parisian terms or maybe even London terms, where you have a European capital that's trying to bring in decorative lampposts into a setting, into a urban environment to make it more elegant. And I think that's really what they have achieved on Columbus. I believe that lighting, particularly the Type M, because they're so big and they're so numerous, makes a very significant statement. But when you add that to what the Type B poles, the pedestrian poles, are doing, it's on two dimensions. You have the boulevard lighting on the roadway surfaces, illuminating the roadway surfaces and providing support for the traffic control signals and that sort of stuff. But you also have the pedestrian luminaire. And in some cases, farther south than you, down in the 80s and possibly 70s, they've got the correct pedestals and bases. I'm sorry, the pedestal bases and poles that are actually used in Central Park. And I have found some of those, some real beauties, and some of them are just gorgeous in the settings that they're in Central Park on the pedestrian walkways. So now I lift that narrative out about the fact that they're in Central Park, and I'm going to have a couple of photographs to illustrate that.
And you should go and see them, because I ride my bike every day in the Riverside. There, that's all they have, the whole length of the park.
That's right, the whole park, and it is gorgeous, and it adds something unique. And it's part of the character, it's part of the setting of that entire thing. Well, so somebody conscientiously decided to lift that onto Columbus Avenue. They didn't do it on Amsterdam. They didn't even do it on Central Park West. It's Columbus for whatever reason. And I haven't really looked at Broadway. I know there are sections of Broadway that do have boulevard lighting in some rare hodgepodge of blocks, but it's not like Columbus. And so I think something where I thought we had a long shot, I mean a real long shot, is now becoming something where I'm feeling much better, much more confident that with this landmark preservation document, whether or not you find it or are successful in finding something from either the Planning Design Commission or the Landmarks Preservation Commission, and we, and keep our fingers crossed, we may get lucky and maybe somebody there is an old timer that remembers, oh yes, back in the 90s they put those in because of this and that. I think we have, with this landmark preservation document that has been referred to as, enough to tell a compelling story to the New York State Historic Preservation people to make them think twice before they, you know, willy-nilly approve the insertion of these monster 32-foot poles. I'm also writing a narrative. I have written some of it. I write a little bit more that explains that the applicant, Bolden Networks / City Bridge, has attempted to arbitrarily redefine the meaning of the area of potential effects and to reduce it to 500 feet. And I've knocked that down by reminding everybody that there has been no determination on reducing anything. There's been a statement by the applicant that they think it should be, but there's been no quote-unquote mutual agreement by the State Historic Preservation Office. And I don't think they're in any hurry to get that decision made that would reduce it, right? That's one thing. The second element is that the applicant is asserting way at the bottom of the document, way down, I think it's exhibit or attachment 5 or something like that, they're asserting that since there is no direct line of sight between the site of the proposed pole and the historic property, that there's no harm done. In other words, I come out the front door of the property and I can't see the pole, and vice versa. If I stand at the pole, I can't see the property. But that's not the way the law is written. And so I have also written narrative that explains, wait a minute, the way that works is there is this concept of a setting which is both a foreground and a background of the area within the area of potential effects that is disturbed by this change, this introduction of a pole. And there's nowhere in there that says it has to be a direct line of sight. It's simply that you're affecting the setting, right? And so I've got a little bit more complicated stretch of explaining that streetscapes in an urban environment are in fact landscapes, because that's the term they use, the landscape, the setting or the land, which includes the landscape, right? And I'm saying that you're modifying that streetscape, albeit it's Columbus Avenue. I'm going to contend, wait a minute, you've modified that landscape, you're adversely visually impacting the feeling, the association, the context of the setting. And that's a little bit more of a stretch, but I'm hoping the fact that there are so many of these poles and it was such a conscientious decision by somebody within the city administration, might be many years ago, and that actually plays to our case. The longer that ago that they made this decision shows that it was a conscious decision to restore the feel and the setting of Columbus Avenue. The woman told you, and I'll stop talking about this real quick, but Ellen made a point. Well, they were only in the historic district, and you're asking about poles that are outside of the historic district. And what I'm saying is, yes, that's true. They are outside of the historic district. If you go down into the 80s and you find the original Upper West Side, Central Park West Historic District, yes, that's Columbus Avenue is inside that district, but these are poles outside the district. I'm saying somebody, you know, came up with the money and the budget to put those poles north of the historic district boundaries. And so I'm saying that's because they wanted to continue that look and feel between other historic districts that were on the east and on the west of Columbus Avenue. So those are my contentions, and that's what I'm trying to build in the story that we have.
Okay. So let me just ask you a few things.
Sure.
The fact that they go all the way, now I haven't gone below 92nd Street, but, I don't think I told you. I called the woman at Landmarks West about these poles.
Yes, which is great, yeah.
Preservation.
Okay, yeah.
Hold on a second. Somewhere here. Yeah. Hold on. I wrote down her name. Of course, I can't find it because my notes are all over the place.
But you had used a pseudonym, as I recall, right? Right, pseudonym so she didn't know who you were.
Yeah, call me back. My name was Sue Jorgen.
Okay, good. Okay, that was pretty good.
Yeah, I didn't. Anyway, but when I spoke with her, I explained. I was very curious to know why these poles are going up from 93rd Street all the way up to 110th Street. And I described to her, every corner has diagonal poles, and then there are three corners that have these poles on all four corners, you know?
Right, right.
And the extent of them. And she said, well, I don't really know. I think that I think that they're in the historic district at 88th Street, but she was saying she didn't know anything about it, which is strange, you know, it's her district. Anyway.
Well, not really, you know, people, and this is where you're going to be, this the comments here that are going to be submitted will hopefully, what's that old term, raise some consciousness here. These are elements of your streets and your that people don't think about, right? Who thinks about street lights or, you know, all that sort of stuff? I had to point out to the folks over on Park Avenue, which, by the way, the rumor has it that the three poles that were very similar in context to what's going on Columbus, there were three of them roughly three blocks apart, four blocks apart, in the 90s over on Park Avenue, that they wanted to install these things, and they supposedly have been withdrawn. But the Park Avenue people talked to me, and they asked me what I saw and whatever else, and I pointed out to them that there are no street lights outside of the boundaries of the crosswalks. And on Park Avenue, those crosswalks are extremely well marked. But the traffic lights are inside those white lines that are painted across. So if you go to the length of those white lines, the street lights are lined up on the edges of them, right? And there's nothing mid-block. The only street lighting mid-block is in the center islands. And that was a very, very important distinction there. I said that many of those blocks don't have anything on the sidewalks. And so they want to introduce an element on the sidewalk where there is no overhead architecture. And you know, the famous thing on Park Avenue, it's a famous characteristic of streetscape of Park Avenue that nobody thinks about, is the awnings. All those residential buildings have awnings that stretch out from the entrances out to the curb, and those awnings all have polished brass poles. So if you ride your bike over to Park Avenue, you go up now Park Avenue, you go, oh, that's the look and the feeling of Park Avenue. And so I told them, I said, you really need to drive home the fact that these poles are going to upset that streetscape. They're going to fundamentally change and add a piece of aerial architecture that doesn't exist anywhere on Park Avenue that's going to upstage your awnings and your brass poles and whatever else. So also on Park Avenue, they have no mailboxes. You know, those big green, those blue and sometimes green, you know, those are the storage boxes, but the blue mailboxes that you used to find all over the streets of New York, there's still a few of them. On Park Avenue, years ago, that somebody decided they didn't like those mailboxes, so they would build the mailboxes into the walls of the buildings, and then, of course, they were made out of brass, and then they polished the socks off, right?
Right.
And so if you go up and down Park Avenue, that's another distinctive feature. Well, I tried to point out to them that if you're going to introduce a stainless steel monolith like that, where there is no stainless steel, you're going to really upset the whole streetscape. All of their poles over there are painted black. Yours are painted green. Theirs are all painted black. So those are the little things that nobody thinks about, but they are the characteristics of your streetscape along Columbus Avenue.
Well, you know,
it would be nice if it had it other streets too, but that's what you have at Columbus.
I wanted to ask you something. I was coming back on the bus today, and goes along part of Central Park West.
Is that the 18 Crosstown, or is that the 104?
Yeah. It's the 72nd Crosstown.
Oh, okay. All right. Sorry.
Yeah. Then it goes up. It reaches Central Park West from the east at around 66th, 67th Street. Goes up Central Park West to 72nd, and then goes across 72nd. So I'm looking on the west side of Central Park West from the bus, and on each of the corners that I'm passing, on each of the northwest corner, there's a very historic light fixture, you know, light pole. Not
give me a second. I'll look it up on Google Maps and we'll take a look at it here. Yeah.
And
you said 72nd and Central Park West.
Well, yeah. You can look there, but you can look like on 71st and Central Park West, 70th and Central Park West. They're at each corner. Each of those streets that come into Central Park West from the west. On the northwest corner of that intersection, it's a very historic pole.
Okay.
And you could share. You can share it. I'll give you. You have share rights, so you can share it. But I noticed that each one of those historic poles has what looks like a pole top antenna, and it has a little box.
Yeah, isn't that horrible? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And I wanted to ask you about that. Did they have to get approval for that?
Yes, and it's awful and it's tragic, but it is a separate thing. None of those ever went through Section 106.
Because?
None of them.
Because?
Yeah, and as far as I can determine, but there is a separate contract that is also maintained by the Office of Technology and Innovation that allows, in cooperation with the Department of Transportation, that allows wireless providers to put a thing called a backpack on any existing streetlight anywhere. And so, of course, there are millions of them in Manhattan. By the way, those poles, they're specifically referenced in that document, and I don't have it in front of me. I'm looking at the intersection of 72nd and Central Park West, and there are several of them. Let's get me see if I can get back to this picture. But those poles are what do they call those things? They are dual poles, and you're right. It is a historic design. Those are not historic poles, but that's a historic design. So those are reproductions. And at 72nd, according to Google Maps, 72nd and Central Park West, there's four of them,
wow.
Right? You were on the bus, and you might have only been able to quickly see a couple, one or two of them.
Yeah.
But there's actually four. There's four of them. And I'd go up and down Central Park West, and I'm sure it ends before you get to the 80s. Maybe it goes up to 96. I don't know. But those backpack units also have a single whip antenna that goes up on the top. You can't, because of the structural capacity of those poles, you can't load them up with antennas. But I'm looking at that's terrible. Thanks for printing that out. I'm looking at Central Park West, and on three of the four, there are backpack configurations, and maybe they extend into the park. I don't know. But it's really sad because that's in a historic district, and all of those should have been taken through. Yeah, there's a different pole design down at 71st. So I guess there they are. There's one of them. Yeah, you're right. It's the northwest corner. There's at least one, and then the other poles are a different design. But at 72nd, there's four of them.
Every corner I passed from 67th Street to 72nd had a northeast corner, those poles with the antenna on the top.
Yeah. And there are, there's other poles. Yeah, there's other poles that are mid-block. They've got the same design of that, let's call it a twin mast pole until I can come up with the name of it. They are identified. There are some blocks that have those lights mid-block. But that is exactly what we're trying to convey, that somebody has taken the time and the trouble put this stuff up here. Now, those backpack units, I think they're sort of hoping that no one will notice and no one will force them into Section 106. But if they have gone through Section 106, I would be really stunned that that would be the case.
I asked Odette around a week ago. I brought it up, and I think I told you, I live on 98th between Broadway and West End.
And right.
I know ever since I been part of this group fighting 5G, I'm starting to look around my neighborhood more. And in between 98th and 99th, on the east side of West End Avenue, they're building a pole. I'm thinking, wow, I want to know what's going on, because of 5G.
Right, right.
And I go over there, and they're putting under the ground, they're across West End Avenue, they're drilling a hole so that they can put the cable to the pole, right?
Right,
And they have a couple of Department of Transportation documents, and I'm looking at them, permission to build this, to do that. And then I talked to the doorman of the building that this is right in front of, and he says, oh, yeah, they're going to put 5G there. He's all excited. He's all excited. Oh, 5G,
yeah, that's right.
They're going to have it all up and down West End Avenue. So I brought it up with Odette, and I said, well, this is this older contract. I said, but, does this go through Section 106? She said, no, it didn't.
I'm sorry, I was absent a lot of the meeting because somehow I got hooked into another meeting and I couldn't get loose. But I sent a I just did some funny research for using AI about why that thing was, and they said the reason why they got away with putting the poles on Columbus Avenue was so that if the poles could accommodate the new kind of lighting that they needed, LED lighting, and also...
That's right, the new standard,
so it accommodated the 5G. So, in other words, for technological convenience, we're going to override historical precedent or something, historical preservation? I mean, is there a long-standing thing for that kind? Is there precedent for that kind of thing?
No, and that's why AI, sometimes you come up with this stuff and it reaches conclusions that don't necessarily make sense. No, that's definitely not the case. There's no way that you can override a 106 just by saying, well, I put in a new poll, so therefore I'm exempt from 106, or we use this poll to get around 106. Again, what happened here is there's a separate set of contracts that have been in place for years that the Office of Technology and Innovation permits people like Extenet, people like AT&T, people like Verizon to put these backpack units up. Mm-hmm. And if I was picking a spot that I wanted to put those backpacks, definitely 72nd and Central Park West would be an absolute place where I'd want to cluster of them, because that's a major pedestrian transit point. It's also a major automobile transit point, and there's a lot of backup of traffic there, particularly, you know, during the day, as it always is in Manhattan, or at night when people are going to the theater or to the restaurants or whatever. It's a very, very busy area with a lot of pedestrian traffic. And so they're looking to build more capacity to handle more calls, handle more, you know, video calls, more people playing games, people, you know, sending photographs, whatever it is.
Right.
But no, Peter, I would disagree with that conclusion from your AI engine that it would make sense if I was putting in new poles that I wanted a heavier pole that would hold more weight, because without question, wireless antennas and wireless equipment, and you have to have the equipment on the poles or at least adjacent to poles on the ground. What that equipment is radio and battery backup and you know, transformers and stuff like that. Those things that go in the cabinet, that's the backpack, and then the antenna sticks on the top.
Right.
So, but the simply putting in a new poll does not exempt you from the 106 requirements.
Right.
So,
yeah.
And so whoever told you, and I cut you off, Peter, I'm sorry, but whoever told you, Sue, that they didn't go through 106, gave you, I think, correct information. And that's a whole other chapter for us to come back to. Because
yes,
right there at 72nd and Central Park West is the Dakota. And of course, you know, the Beatle guy, what was his name? I don't know. He got shot there.
John Lennon.
I mean, that whole area is very famous. That building is a federal historic designated landmark. Nobody went through Section 106 to put those antennas on those poles, and they should have. Particularly, what's even worse than that, those are historic reproduction poles, so they were never intended to have that kind of technology hanging off of them. I mean, what's the purpose of a historic reproduction if I slap some sort of a 20th century technology on top of it, right? I mean, that just completely kills the look and the feel of it.
Well, Odette was the person who said that it hadn't gone through historic Section 106, and I said to
her... Oh, Odette said that. Okay,
yeah.
Good. Then I'll take... Then Odette is telling me, I've got a big smile on my face as a result of it. I hope she's right. Because I think that's a whole other set of contracts that we can come back and attack.
And I said
there's a poor woman...
I sit there because I can't live in New York with all of this 5G.
Right.
Well,
and they want to bring it to you as fast as they can, I can tell you, but they don't want to bury it. They don't want to bury it. They don't want to bring it to you in a cable. They want to blast it through your windows.
I know.
And that's a very different thing.
So
yeah.
I said to Odette, I said, well, Odette, can we do anything about it? And she said, well, she said, at the beginning of next year, I'm going to bring it up with Jerry Nadler. Because he was the one who got this Section 106 for these big cell towers.
Well, and let's definitely do that, because if we are successful here, even if we're partially successful here, and we force these guys to go back and redesign these units or to reposition these units and make them smaller or make them in different locations, that's a big victory. But it also allows us to go get Extenet and AT&T and Verizon and knock them off those poles. The first person that I dealt with anywhere in New York on this entire issue was a poor woman over on East 92nd Street who's down by, what do they call that, Asphalt Park. And I don't know if you're familiar with that at all, but there used to be a giant old asphalt plant over off of FDR Drive and 92nd. And it's the strangest looking building you've ever seen. It looks like a turned over half moon type building. And it was a giant concrete structure, and they had an asphalt plant inside of it. Well, they stopped making asphalt there for a lot of different reasons and turned it into a city park, and now it's called Asphalt Park. But it's a historic landmark, federally designated historic landmark, and she's directly across the street, and right outside of her window, less than 10 feet from her window, is a great big facility on an existing light pole under that extant contract with the OTI.
Let me just interject
here
that the reason why a famous UK technologist, a guy who was a frogman during the Second World War, got involved with this was that he went to the doctor one day, and the doctor asked him, look, you understand technology. I just had the second occurrence of an infant dying at a local cottage, and the infant's room was on the other side of the wall from one of these towers. Do you think there could be some connection? My wife died of brain cancer because she slept in an electronic field. I mean, I know the law specifically says we can't bring up physiological, you know, or health effects on this. That's the way they wrote the law to get around that. But anyway, I'm thinking that just like they did with diethyl sibestrol, that nausea medicine for pregnant women that generated all these thalidomide babies. I'm hoping that somehow we can reopen some kind of thing later in that. This is kind of a side issue. But I just wanted you to be aware of that. I'm on a third floor, and if they put one of those poles up on my block, it could be right outside my window.
That's going on all over Manhattan, all over the five boroughs of New York, and unfortunately they're letting them be even closer than 10 feet, which is, should never happen. It's something where you can thank a woman that you may or maybe. Let me think of her name here for a second. Anyway, there was a case, and I'll just not to go too far off in the weeds in this thing, but there was a case that was brought to the appeals court where they forced the FCC to admit that there was no scientific basis for their current guidelines, standards about radio frequency emissions from wireless facility. And that case, which was decided in the DC Court of Appeals case, forced the FCC, remanded back to the FCC and said, hey, look, you have to prove that your standards are in fact safe. There's no scientific basis here to demonstrate that they're safe. And the FCC at this point has done nothing. And what's happening, the good news is that these wireless companies that are relying on FCC standards can no longer come and say, well, the FCC says it's safe, because the FCC can't say it's safe anymore.
They're
making incremental process, but that doesn't allow you to stop them, unfortunately. I wish it would, but
let me just say, that case was 2021, right?
That's right, 2021, right.
All last year, OTI was giving presentations and saying, we follow FCC guidelines, it's safe.
Well, they shouldn't be saying that, because those FCC guidelines have been shot down in federal court of appeals, and it's been remanded to the FCC. They have been allowed to stand, but the FCC has been told by the court, and they will soon be out of compliance with the court if they don't do something, that those standards have no legal basis. There is no scientific proof that's the title.
Right.
By the way, that lamppost on Central Park West at 72nd Street and up and down Central Park West, as we talked about that, is called a 24. It's called a Type 24 twin You could have them single, which is a type 24, or you can have a type 24 twin. And it's that pole design dates back to at least 1911, and it was made famous because they were on the old sections of Fifth Avenue, up and down Fifth Avenue, around 14th Street and northward.
Let me interject that we have less than 1 minute left.
Oh, no. Okay, I'm talking away here. Sorry
about
that. Yeah.
So this is going to end it, and I'll send out another Zoom. It'll be good in 9 minutes. They insist on a 9 minute.
All right, I won't be able to stay on much longer than that. This is our last evening here in Austin. Peter, I explained this a little while ago. We are traveling home tomorrow, so we're going out to dinner with my family. But I can get on for a few more minutes, and then we'll talk about strategy here and what our next steps are.
Okay.
All right.
See you soon.
Okay. Okay.
Hello? It'll be the same link, but I'm going to send it anyway. I guess it gives the time. It's just 9 minutes from when it ended. Good. Okay. Bye.
Let
Hi.
I'm back.
Good. Quickly, I want to ask you some things. I looked over the emails I got from some of them from City Bridge, some from Tower Notify, info@fcc.com.
And, right.
One of the things I wanted to ask you, they said that December 4th, this is City Bridge, December 4th is the last day to submit comments to 2800 Broadway. So that was like the 15-day, you know, thing. December 4th is what they said. That's this coming Monday.
Yeah, so there's not a lot of time here, so.
But that's your understanding too, right?
And again, when you first sent that to me, I couldn't offer you an explanation for why they'd given us that timeline. And I still can't. I think the original expiration was several days ago, maybe more. But they made some sort of a change to the application that I could not understand what that change was, and apparently that they had to extend it another 2 weeks.
Well, the thing is, one of those FCC Tower Notify info@fcc.com.
You're right.
I received it November 27th. Okay. And it says, quote, as approved by NY SHPO on 11/8, consulting party have 15 days to respond. So is that's something new from SHPO?
Well, wait a minute now. So if I add 15 days to November 8th, that's November 23rd, right?
Well, it might be the day that my consulting status was approved.
Oh, I see. Okay. And what day was your consulting status approved?
Well, that's not on the tip of my lips.
Tongue, but whatever. They're giving you until December 2nd to offer comments.
Well, they said, right? December 4th.
Oh, December 4th. Okay. And December 4th is next week, and what day is it next week? Sorry.
Monday,
okay. That's the bad news, and that we've got a deadline that's pretty tight. The good news is I think that probably, in my mind anyway, 75% of the document is written, and I'd like to clean up some of the photos and add some photos to it, but I think the principal comments and the main lines and some of the critical research that we need to hit is, I think, nearing completion. I'm hopeful that either the Landmark Preservation Commission or the Planning Design Commission will tell you why those green poles are up and down Columbus, but I'm not counting on it. So I think we can still, using the materials that we have in the document from the approving those historic poles, individual pole sites, I think we can build a story with what we have to kind of submit comments in there.
Right. And also, we can use the bulk of that for the other poll in Columbus in 19.
Yeah. So, and what is the deadline for that one? Is it the same date as well?
No, because that they announced it. They 7/15. I wrote it down here. 7/15. 715 Columbus Avenue. So that Tower Notify info@fcc.com came out November 22nd. New tower.
And that said 15. That said 15 days, or that said 30 days.
That said, hold on. 30-day review period starts now. That's
okay. Good.
City Bridge said that.
All right. Good. So we have plenty of cushion on that one, and I agree that. Unless we change our tune a little bit, or unless we get additional information that would markedly, you know, modify our conclusions, I would say that the two are very, very similar in circumstances and arguments as to why they should not be approved.
Exactly.
Right?
And then they won't put any on that Columbus Avenue stretch.
Right. I hope not. Up and down anywhere on Columbus. I would like to find out more about the Park Avenue poles. The rumor has it and this is Michelle Birnbaum that was that sent me an email over the weekend on this, that supposedly those applications have been withdrawn. And I'm hoping to find out more information as to why they've been withdrawn. That may not have been disclosed. It may be that the folks at City Bridge didn't figure they could win, and they didn't want to take the chance of having a precedent set by losing and having a published case where they lost, so they withdrew it before they could get a bad decision by New York SHPO. So, these two, obviously next Monday is racing at us.
Right.
So we'll get that finished.
Yeah, that's that other hotel on 108th and Broadway.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you want me to do any work on that?
On which one? On the Broadway and...
108.
That one... I have not been following that one closely, and I have not submitted any comments on it. But like you, it has exactly the same type M poles up there. It is across the street from Columbia. It should have never been built there, as far as I'm concerned. But I have not written any comments on it, and I'm not sure how much more time we have on it. I have not been tracking that one very carefully.
Well, I'm
also working
the Manhasset apartment one.
Oh, the Manhasset apartment. So I thought we were talking about the one at Columbia University, and I can't remember what that cross street is. That's farther north, obviously.
118.
Okay. Do you remember what the dates are on the Manhasset apartments?
It's the same as 97th and Columbus.
Monday. Ugh. I have done nothing on that one. I mean, I've done some research on the Manhasset apartments, and I found the old filing on it and the wonderful text that mentions the curve in Columbus Avenue that gives you the view of the building, but I haven't written anything on it. Let me see what I can do on that.
You know,
I'm also working on
West Preservation Journal. Has the a picture of it and some description.
Of the current issue you're talking about, or you found this in the back issue?
Well, this is the one, a friend of mine gave me this. Let me see when this was.
You're talking about My Preservation Journal, right?
Yeah. What do you have a date on yours, Rich? Because they gave that to you after it, and I don't know when Sharon got this to give to me. This one is 2017. At the back page, it says Landmark West 2017.
Let me check mine.
So, like the document we were talking about, there is a filing for historic designation of the Manhasset apartments. And it goes into tremendous detail about the financing and the construction of the building and the modifications of the building that were made. They put a top floor on it, a different roof line. But the critical thing was in that narrative for the historic designation, and this is the New York City Landmarks Preservation Designation, it mentions very specifically the bend in Broadway there gives this panoramic view from a very long distance of the apartment building, which is very unusual because, you know, on the grid streets of Manhattan, everything is looking north and south or east and west. But because there's a bend in Broadway there, you have this wide vista that's dominated by the Manhasset. And putting the pole where they want to put it allows me to say, wait a minute, you're breaking that vista. You're adding a dominant element that's going to break up the view.
Right.
But I haven't written that up. And the reason I haven't, one is I've been traveling, but the second reason is that I've been working with the folks down in Chinatown on a whole nother project involving the same kind of towers down in Chinatown. So I just haven't written that one yet.
Okay. Do you want me to?
Not that it isn't important. I would love you to. If you, there's different ways you can get that document, but essentially it's, I'm going to lift pieces of the narrative out of the comments that you're seeing there.
Which document are you talking about? The note.
The document for the poll at 97 and Columbus, some of that text can be used to back up statements about the Manhasset apartments.
The document you sent us, and then the woman from Landmarks Preservation Commission sent us that document.
That's right. So some of those comments about that, but there's also another document that the Landmarks Preservation Commission would have approved, and that is the nomination form for the Manhasset Apartments to be designated as a New York City landmark. And that's the document that has text in it that says, hey, there's a bend in the road, and as a result of it, you get this big panorama. What's also
You found that document, right?
Yes, I did find that document. I have that document.
I think you shared it with me and James.
I may have. If I did, then I'm delighted that I did. But that document, in that general vicinity, and I can't remember if it's in the Manhasset Apartments document or not, or if it's a separate one for a historic district that's up there, there's also a subway station, and it might be 110th, maybe not.
There is a 110th Street stop on the west side.
Yes, but is it at Broadway and 110th? Peter,
yes.
Do you remember? And
yes.
Is it near the Manhasset? Is that right?
It probably is.
Yeah, okay, so...
It's a block. Manhasset is what? From 108th to 109th? Yeah.
It's like two blocks.
Block, and that's the subway.
Yeah, but those are long blocks up there, obviously. But there's a subway station. Now, a subway station is problematic because it's all underground. And there's a unique thing in New York City called an interior landmark. And there are certain subway stations where they have designated them as interior landmarks. So the design of the tile work or the layout of the station itself might be, you know, somewhat unique. You guys know my story a little bit. I lived at Lincoln Towers at Broadway and 72nd. And that subway station, which is above ground, portions of it, above ground at 72nd and Broadway, is also a designated landmark. But anyway, that's close enough to where sections of it are within, I don't know, 500 feet, and I can throw that into my narrative. I haven't tried that yet about how the poll, again, for pedestrians that are on their way to that particular stop have to pass by that pole, and it affects the setting and the, you know, the context of the streetscapes.
Oh yeah.
But I think but the major part of what we're doing is that the Manhasset apartment building that tower is going to cut the vista looking south to north up Broadway, if you will. That tower is going to really affect the vista and the setting as a result of it. I'm going to go back here to, before I say it, just to make sure I'm correct on this, but it seems to me that section of Broadway does not have decorative poles. Historically accurate poles is a better way to say it.
I just want to add that the Landmarks West Preservation Journal,
yes,
page 28-29, it has the huge picture of the Manhasset apartments, and in the right
it's really nice, yeah.
In the description it says, the building covers the entire block front, and because it is located where Broadway makes a curve, it can be seen from many blocks away. That's one of the things they say.
Yes, and so that sentence, right, is the whole crux of the argument that I hope to build, that they want to put that pole on the southeast corner so that it has the maximum adverse effect on the vista toward the Manhasset apartments. And so if I was standing at Broadway and 107th or Broadway and 106th, right, and I'm looking at the Manhasset apartments from that direction, well, there's the pole sticking right up in front of the building. And so I'm hoping that we, you know, can build a strong argument that it's changing the setting, affecting the setting there.
But the southeast corner is on the opposite
side
of the street from Manhasset.
Yeah, right. But as a result of it, it breaks the line.
It fractures the effect of the congeniality of the cityscape.
That's right.
The
exactly
whole
right.
Perspective okay. of this is the feeling and the location. It fractures it.
Okay.
Yeah, and I know why they want to put the pole there. It's because the building that's adjacent to it is set back from the curb. There's a, it looks like a supermarket or something there. But it's set way back on the sidewalk. It's a very broad section of sidewalk. And in fact, that's true with the other buildings, too. So they get a really good range on their signal by sighting it right there. So I know why they want to put it there, but it has just the wrong effect on the...
Yeah, by the same token, it has a disparate effect of breaking the cityscape and the feeling of the location.
Right. That's right. So up the street, though, there's the subway station, and I'm going to look at that a little bit more carefully. There are vents in the center islands, and you know how that is with the subway lines. They have those vents that come up.
Right.
Those are in the islands, and those are part of the historic designated subway station. Hmm. And so I'm going to say, hey, this is also going to have an adverse effect on that. That's a real stretch, but I'll throw it in anyway just because we'll try it.
And you know, Broadway, between 106th and 107th, is a very historic little park there. It's a little triangular park with a statue in there.
Yes, and you may or may not be aware of that, but that park has got a sister park way down in the south end of Manhattan that's also dedicated to the Strausses, Mr. and Mrs. Isidore and Ida Strauss, who died on the Titanic.
Oh, my God.
And, yes, so let me tell you where the Titanic comes into play in New York City. There's so many different wonderful things about this, but Ida Strauss, when given the opportunity to take a seat on a lifeboat, said, no, I won't leave my husband. And so the two of them perished, and that was one of hundreds of awful stories that came out of the Titanic that night. But let me tell you about Jane Street, way, way down in the village. Jane Street had a wharf that was owned by the White Star Line. And when the boat that came to the rescue, remember how they shot off the fireworks and nobody came to the rescue? The next morning, another boat finally did come to the rescue. And there's the survivors in the lifeboats freezing to death. And so they picked them up. They picked up the survivors, loaded them onto the boat, and they picked up the lifeboats, right? So that steamer came back to New York and went up the Hudson River and found its berth that it had departed from several days prior, that was like 5 or 6 blocks north on the Hudson River there. And after they had unloaded their passengers and the survivors from the Titanic, they backed out. They went down the Hudson a couple of blocks and pulled into the White Star Wharf and offloaded the lifeboats.
Oh, nice, yeah.
Think about that. Okay, they offloaded the lifeboats. So anyway, then all of
what
the
What am
seamen,
I thinking about that?
Yeah,
returning the vestigial lifeboats that perished with the that would have been with the boat with the ship, returning it to its home berth.
Home
so
berth,
to speak.
But all they brought back was the lifeboats.
Right.
And so all the passengers had been offloaded at the other pier. Now they were bringing back the lifeboats. But just down the street from that, maybe 100 yards, there's a thing called the Seamen's Institute. And it's now a hotel called the Hotel Jane. But at that time, it was cheap lodging for
sailors,
wayfarers, you know, people that worked on boats that were, you know, in between cruises. They had a place to stay that was a reputable place to stay, that was affordable. And they took all of the Titanic crewmen that had been in those lifeboats and put them in the Jane because they were all potential witnesses. And then, as you may recall, because there have been several books about it, there was a huge investigation about what happened. And those guys had been put up at the Siemens Institute, were then called in individually as witnesses. But they want to put a pole right there.
Oh, right my there. God.
Of
I
course.
Dare them to
right
do
there.
That.
Yeah.
I dare them.
And there's a guy, fortunately, the good news is there's a movie producer that lives down there, and his name's going to come to me in a minute. He's been on Zach Weinstein. Zach is a tremendous writer, tremendous researcher, and he's been going after those polls and has been doing a good job submitting comments on them. But for whatever reason, they want to put a lot of those polls down in the West Village. And but there's the history. So there's your Strausses who perished in the Titanic, and there's another story about it. There is yet another park to the Strausses in southern Manhattan down by, is it 14th Street, maybe? I don't know. It's down there.
Rick, I'm a monetary historian, and there's a lot of information about a lot the people that went down in the Titanic were the wealthy people who were against the creation of the Federal Reserve Bank.
How about that? The Strauss, Mr. Strauss, as I understand it, owned Macy's.
Oh, right? Yes, yeah.
Yes,
Levi
yes.
Strauss, yeah, right.
Yeah, he owned Macy's. And he had another park down in southern Manhattan, and that park was unique because he was running a dairy that was selling pasteurized milk so that small children had clean milk to drink. So anyway, that's on and on and on. We go on and on and on. But they want to put a pole down there, and in fact, I think it's already been built, and I don't think it's come up for 106 yet, but it will. But that, to me, when I was talking with Zach Weinstein about what had happened down there and that little piece of history for the Titanic, could you imagine, though, standing there watching them offload those lifeboats? Oh, my heavens.
Sure, yeah, yeah, very emotional yeah. moment.
Very emotional moment. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, so let's go on to the next steps, and thank you very much for reminding me of the dates a moment ago. I'm traveling tomorrow, flying back to the D.C. area on Thursday and Friday. I'm going to go back to work on the 97th and Broadway pole, and then I will also try to turn my attention quickly to the
97th in Columbus.
97th in Columbus, thank you. And then also the pole at Manhasset Apartments.
Okay.
And see if I can offer some comments on that. We just need to win a couple of them, and ultimately it's going to upset their plans in a big way. But again, full disclosure on my end, I'm hoping that we can get them to offer a smaller design and agree to put these things as far away as possible from historic landmarks.
Is there any way we can kind of force some kind of better argument that there would be better underground, which is of course the name of Odette's organization?
You know, yes, and
Broadband.
No, in the near term, I'm not optimistic that we can force them into wired technology for two reasons. One is that there are huge financial interests and huge money at stake for putting these things above ground and for facilitating wireless transmissions. We're three grains of salt on the beach trying to hold back a tidal wave.
Right.
What I hope at this point we can do is kill them by a million pinpricks. Are you with me? Where
sure.
They keep running into these obstacles where folks like us are standing up saying, no, you can't do this. You can't do this. Here's the rules. By the way, they're trying to change those rules. They're trying the legislation that Odette is fighting against at the federal level that these guys are trying really hard to get passed. I don't think they'll get it passed. I don't think Biden would sign it. I don't think it would get through the Senate. But there's a huge amount of lobbying money that's being thrown around on this. In the meantime, in these various battles in Manhattan, I hope that we can force them to offer smaller designs. But I'm also hoping that it's going to force these backpack units like the four we were just talking about, two that we identified at Central Park West and Broadway, I'm sorry, at Central Park West and 72nd, force those guys to go through Section 106.
Yeah, that's what
that will be a huge problem for them. Huge problem. If they have to suddenly go back, if as you said, Odette is successful, and I'll do everything I can to help her be successful on that, and Representative Nadler, Chairman Nadler, gets that letter and forces these guys to come back and do a Section 106, there are hundreds upon hundreds and hundreds of these all over New York City that have never been through Section 106. And you've got them on the west side. You just have to look around for them.
I was down on 64th Street because I sometimes visit with a friend down there, Central Park West to Broadway, and I noticed a truck. It was at night, and I noticed a truck putting poles along that block. I don't know anything about the block particularly, but anyway, it's...
Well, and there's different stages of construction for this stuff, just to quickly explain that to you. There's routine maintenance for light poles that goes on all the time. There's a thing called hardening or strengthening, where they will come back and decide they want to put up an antenna facility, but they need a stronger pole. And they'll take the existing pole out and they'll put a sturdier, sometimes taller pole in. But it's in an existing footprint, so the FCC rules are very, very, very generous about that. What's the opening for us is that none of them have been through 106. They are required to go through 106. There is really no rational excuse why a nationally known wireless company like Extenet, AT&T, or Verizon would have pretended that they didn't need to go through Section 106 and allow these backpack units to go up, right? Nobody at the Office of Technology and Innovation was paying any attention to that, which is also inexcusable. And it fell to Jerry Nadler's legislative assistant to say, hey, these guys haven't been through Section 106. And thank heavens they wrote that letter, and the rest is history.
Right.
But now we need that. We need to, we'll get a couple of wins here, hopefully, and then we'll go push them, these other guys into Section 106 as well. And maybe eventually, to your point, they will start to admit, hey, we need to spend more time on fiber and stop trying to put these poles everywhere.
They want the surveillance. That's what that's what the wireless gives them.
Yeah, that's what the difference between 4 and 5G is. 4, it's not going to really improve that much downloading. It's because of surveillance and the Internet of Things connecting all these other things.
Yes, you have tremendously greater bandwidth to handle many, many, many more simultaneous high density transmissions. So multiple video feeds coming through on a wireless connection, as opposed to maybe one or two. I mean, because video takes up a lot of bandwidth. So yes, surveillance cameras or other kinds of video feeds or other instruments that are out there, you bet.
I know that that wireless is far less secure than wired technology. You know, maybe that's if we could keep some technological opening for that kind of argument, that there it's inferior, and therefore why should we invest long term in something that's so vulnerable?
Yes, it is very vulnerable, and it is indeed hackable. Just ask the Ukrainians. It is something that, at this point, Section 106 has no provisions for that.
Sure, sure.
But there are other reasons why people should be very, very concerned about it, and certainly security and hackability are two of those elements.
Right.
The Ukrainians have been tapping into video feeds all over Russia for a long time, and others, you know, I'm sure, other Chinese and the Russians doing the same to us all the time. So,
right.
Whatever. Anyway, I'm going to have to pull off the call here. But if you, why don't we plan to talk again on Friday, perhaps, if that works with you. And I'll be back. We'll have had some time to work, spend some additional time on redrafting and adding a few sections, and should be getting near to having a really hopefully pretty well finalized version that can be submitted as comments.
Great. Friday, Rick?
Yeah, so let's...
What time, she's saying?
Yeah, what time? Hang on a second here. I've got to now look at my calendar.
By the way, while you're looking at that, would it be of any benefit to you to look at that My Preservation Journal, just in terms of seasoning your thoughts?
Is there a digital version of it somewhere that you can...
I don't know. Yeah, where are you located geographically?
Geographically, I will be first in Fairfax, Virginia for a couple of days, and then I'm going to be out in Delaware at the second house. But if you... if you scan it and email it to me, or if you want to mail it to me, is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, I was just wondering, do you have a residence in New York where you could leave it at a doorman or something?
Oh, I wish I could say that. I will be in New York, though, in a couple of weeks. I'm coming up there to take my granddaughter to a performance of the Rockettes. But that we will have gone past our deadline before that.
Sure.
Let's see here. Do you have a scanner by any chance to where you'd be able to take a picture of the magazine?
I mean, it's several pictures. How many pages is it? I'm looking at it. Plus, there's a nice fold-out map.
The map we have online.
Okay. It's 50. It's 52 pages.
And that's all about the Manhasset apartments for 52.
No. It's about several buildings, several spots in New York.
Many.
Oh, okay.
Manhasset gets two pages.
Oh, okay. So what I'm saying is, if you can just scan those two pages, if you have a scanner, or even if you take a picture of it and send me a JPEG or something, I can just magnify it on my phone.
I mean, I was a little bit of a pig. I have an extra copy. I could drop it in a jiffy bag, you know, in the next few days and mail it to you if you give me a mailing address. I don't know.
Yeah, that's fine. Let me give you that real quick.
Okay.
I'm at 410-410 Canal Way.
Spell that.
East. Yeah, Canal Way, Way. That's two words. Canal Way East. And that's in beautiful Bethany Beach, B-E-T-H-A-N-Y. Yeah, Bethany Beach, two words.
Right.
Delaware, 19930. You should come down and visit.
19930.
Yes, we have no sales tax. We have almost negligible property taxes.
Mm-hmm.
They don't charge anything on retirement benefits. And a whole lot of people from New Jersey that got wiped out in Sandy wound up coming down to Delaware.
Right. But, and how do you name yourself? Rick? Ricky?
You could just send it to William Meyer, M-E-Y-E-R. Rick is the middle name, nickname, but William Meyer, M-E-Y-E-R.
William Meyer.
Yeah, okay. William Meyer. Yeah.
Okay.
That's hugely appreciated. Thank you very much for offering to send that.
Sure, sure.
Mm-hmm. Why are those New Yorkers living in Bethany Beach? Why?
I met my wife in New York back in the 80s, and I talked her into taking a three-year transfer to Washington, D.C. to open up an office for a company I was working with at the time, which was a Wall Street-based company. And we stayed for 40 years. But her family is from Long Island and Massapequa on the other side of the island from Manhasset, and so we went back and forth to the South Shore of Long Island all the time. But she fell in love, Sue, with the water, having grown up in Massapequa, right on the Great South Bay.
Right.
And we found, when we were looking around for a vacation home, we found a place that was on a canal in Bethany Beach. It has almost the same vegetation as the southern end of Long Island, or for that matter, New Jersey or whatever. And we fell in love with it. We bought it, and now we've decided to retire there. But we keep a house in the D.C. area because that's where I worked for many, many, many years, and where I still have a daughter and some grandkids, in addition to the ones here in Austin.
Uh-huh.
And so that's my connection to Bethany Beach. But it's not the Hamptons, but it's a lot less expensive.
Yeah.
And right.
I don't have to drive on 20. What is that? You know, I don't know, 27 up to the Hamptons in the summer, but we got married at East Hampton, so we're very connected to the Hamptons. We know how gorgeous it is. Your summers out there are still about as good as they get.
I used to go out to Fire Island.
Yeah, but how long have the two of you lived in New York?
I've lived in this apartment since 1980, but I was born in New York.
Okay.
But Sue, you want to reveal?
I was born in Brooklyn. I spent all my life in New York except from the ages of 11 to 23. I was in New Jersey.
You were in New Jersey, but you came back as soon as you could. Is that right?
Yes.
You got out of college.
Well, I had to leave my parents as soon as I could.
Well, my 5 years in Manhattan were some of the best years of my life. I worked for a great company, and I had a couple of fantastic apartments, and it was just some really wonderful years. And you know, my heart is still there, and so I'm honored to be able to participate in some of these projects to try and help. In some cases, like, you know, my fellow New Yorkers, but it makes it a little bit tougher when I'm remote and I can't see the same things you see. So I appreciate you, Sue, particularly your bike tours and the research and the photographs that you've taken, because it really does help.
Covering that whole stuff and all the poles are new one with all of
it. Well, you know, if you could do that, that's kind of a demonstration of how many of these things are. These aren't accidental. This isn't a fluke. Somebody made a very conscious decision to make a parkscape along Columbus, and they did it with decorative poles, and they historically accurate decorative poles. And I think also some of the vegetation. That block that we're looking at, the 97th and Columbus block, I originally estimated there were 8 trees there. There are 12 street trees on that block between the intersections. There's 12 of them. That's a lot of trees. A couple of them are very mature. In other words, they've got a trunk of a foot or more. And so I think that if you add the block north of that and the block south of that, clearly the vegetation, the lighting, the streetscapes, the way they made little pedestrian plazas on some of the wider sections of the sidewalk. I think we have a really good case to present that, you know, the city is maintaining this not because they want some guy with a big honking tower to come along and ruin the vista.
And it's also
this another vista.
The historic district down at 88th in Columbus has those towers, and it just continues past the historic district all the way up to 110th.
That's right. So somebody came up with the original idea. Perhaps it was in the historic district. They liked it so much they just kept going north.
Yeah.
And as you said a minute ago in the conversation, nobody thinks about it, but they're there. And in your subconscious, that's the setting. That's what gives you this feeling on Columbus Avenue.
Right, right. As opposed to walk across the South Bronx or something.
Yes, exactly right. And it's if I was a New Yorker living there now, I would be screaming and jumping up and down that I want historic lighting in my district. By the way, on 72nd Street, a half block in from that intersection where they have the type 24 poles we were talking about, there are Bishop Crook poles. And the Bishop Crooks are the...
Bishop's Crook. Crook. Okay.
Yeah. So thinking of the Pope walking around with that.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm. Pole. Right. The shepherd's pole. Right.
Very evocative name.
Yeah, isn't that a great name? Well, they have a lamp that looks just like a Bishop's Crook, and it's got that the luminaire hanging on the bottom of it. And for narrow sidewalks, that's a very appropriate design because it's not real wide. You can't put a type M twin or a a type 24 or a type M because they're too wide. But the bishop's crook work, and the bishop's crook are all...
Zoom stopped.